You're listening to Spellbound.
Welcome to episode 40 of Spellbound. I'm Julian Smith. If you're enjoying this podcast, be sure to subscribe. It's a great way to not have to remember to do anything. Episodes just magically appear on your phone. You don't have to do shit. It's awesome. And now I've effectively sworn in the intro, so that's going to rule out a lot of people. If you're really loving the podcast, you can also rate and review on Apple Podcasts. That is super helpful for us. And we care a little bit about that. Not much, because it's mainly just about having a good time and learning. But should you feel so inclined, we appreciate it. All right, I'm here with Andrew Rader. The fax machine is back again.
I'm back.
We're here together. We're talking about overpopulation. Is the world overpopulated, Andrew? What do you think?
Well, it depends on who you ask. Malthus thought that we would always produce more people than food and everyone would starve. That's Thomas Malthus. So people have always predicted overpopulation. The Carthaginians actually predicted it when Earth had like 3% of the number of people today. There was like 200 million people on Earth and they thought Earth was massively overpopulated. And now we have 20 times as many people, 30, 40 times as many people. And is the world overpopulated? Well, I mean, it's a matter of perspective. If we can feed all the people and provide houses and jobs and goods for the people, then what does overpopulated mean? The over is kind of the pejorative part of the statement.
I've seen figures on ideal population for the world. Like, there's all these different rationales for these figures, but one that I saw that was really interesting differentiated between a population of hunter-gatherers versus a population of civilized consumers. And so that indicates that it actually has more to do with consumption than it has to do with population itself, which I thought was interesting. What do you think about that?
It's 100% to do with consumption. If you can feed everyone and provide materials for them, then it's totally fine to have lots of people. In terms of living space, we're definitely not overpopulated. If you had the population density of Hong Kong, you could house the entire world in the state of Connecticut.
Wow.
It's just a matter of being able to feed those people. And then there's also the problem of pollution.
Right, right.
And climate change and things like that. So they have those people have an impact on the planet. They consume resources and they put out carbon dioxide. They put out other, you know, gases and waste, and they put plastic in the ocean, which, by the way, whales really judge you for. If you're talking about pollution and climate change and food, then population is a problem, maybe.
What do you mean by whales judge people? What is that?
Well, whales are really smart, and they like to approach your boat and interact with you, and you got to be thinking like, hey, man, like, where did all this plastic come from? I'm a whale. I didn't drop the plastic.
Yeah, but how do they know that they actually judge us?
Well, they give you those eyes.
But how do they know that it's us doing it? Like, that's...
They're pretty smart. Thanks for all the fish.
Okay, so that's basically what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about like a pretty broad range of things. That was a pretty good setup, I guess. It's also worth noting that Andrew and I are totally on opposite ends of the country right now. So we're doing this recording. This is actually the first recording we've done not in the same room, although we've done tons of episodes with other people not in the same room.
Well, it's kind of funny. I'm on one end, but Tennessee isn't really the opposite end. It's kind of in the middle a little bit.
Yeah, that's right. I'm in Tennessee right now. Just getting some time away from the big city.
Like Taylor Swift.
Yeah. That's true. I guess technically it's true that I'm just copying her. But to be fair, I was doing it before she was even a thing. So she's copying me.
All right.
So here's why I'm interested in this topic. Because there's so many people that are afraid of the size of the planet. And I don't know really what to make of it. I mean, actually now I actually do have a position now for the first time. And my position is I don't think that the population is actually a problem. I do think that the way we consume is important, but it is worth noting that our population is skyrocketing right now. You know, we're in the middle of this huge ascent, you know, and it's going to level off soon. These people say, because people are starting to have fewer children and stuff, but it's interesting to me because if it does come down to our consumption, that is a huge responsibility that we have. And we need to talk about that because I know that not every country can consume like America. If we were all consuming on the level that Americans consume, we'd need like 5 planet Earths, I think is the figure or something like that. So, so if it is consumption that's actually the problem, then that means a lot of Americans are going to have to get used to consuming a lot less than they're consuming right now. And that doesn't just mean food. That means electronics. That means electricity in general, gas, and a bunch of other stuff. So it's interesting to me, like, what are the facts that we can know about the population today and where it's going to level off. And what is that actually going to mean about our reduced consumption in the future as we start to roll out all these modern conveniences to the rest of the world? We're going to have to be sharing the same resources. And so, like, what are we actually going to be sacrificing? What is life actually going to look like when our quality of life is universally pretty great?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I was used to think about this when I was younger. And I guess this is why I was sort of an environmentalist, because if you think the way we live, I was in Canada, but basically it's the same. In fact, we probably use more heat in the winter and things like that. But if everyone lived like we live, the world would, you know, exhaust its resources in a really short time frame. Already, we consume more on Earth than we produce. But yeah, it would go to shit really fast, basically. So we do have to find ways to be sustainable, produce energy from the sun. It's a free nuclear thermal reactor out there in space, so might as well use it. And, you know, the only reason why we've been able to feed as many people as we can is because, actually, this is, what's the number one invention in history?
I would say the internet, but I feel like you're going to say agriculture.
Well, agriculture is definitely a good contender, but at least in modern times, the biggest invention was the fixation of nitrogen through the Haber-Bosch process.
Huh.
Because before, all the plants in the world, all the agriculture was fed by bird poop, bird shit, basically. People would go to islands and mine bird shit, and they imported like Chinese workers and things like that to go to giant piles of bird shit in the Pacific Ocean. And that contains a lot of nitrogen, and they would send shiploads of bird shit to Europe.
Shitloads of bird shit.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost a tongue twister. To Europe to pour on all the fields and fertilize the fields. But
no, wait, where was this? America?
This is Europe, but also America. This is like the whole world. The Western nations, like the rich nations in the world, wanted to feed big populations, so they needed to fertilize their fields. Like, our fields are all fertilized, and we wouldn't be able to feed our population if we didn't fertilize our fields, right? With nitrogen products. And back in the day, they were all produced from bird shit islands. So they would go to islands that had seabirds for, like, hundreds of years, thousands of years, and they were just literally, like, mountains of bird shit. And they would have people mine this stuff, and it's really toxic, and people get sick and stuff. So it was a really terrible job. But they would basically send barges of bird shit and then load it onto ships and send the ships to Europe. And they would, like, take the bird shit and pour it all over the fields. And this is how they fed everyone up to the First World War, when the Germans, because they were blockaded by the British Navy, invented the Haber-Bosch process, which is fixing nitrogen. So they took oil and coal, fossil fuels, and basically found a way to extract nitrogen. Actually, I think they got the nitrogen from the air, but it takes a lot of energy. So that was where the fossil fuels comes in.
So this is the Industrial Revolution.
It's later than the Industrial Revolution, but it is a product of the Industrial Revolution. So it's...
Okay.
The Industrial Revolution is when people started using coal. The British actually started in the 1700s. They started taking coal on the ground. And steam engine, really. So when you start using machines powered by steam, and you have, like, steam ships that go on rivers, and you have the railroad, and you have machines that extract things from the ground, like to mine and stuff like that. That's the Industrial Revolution. People working in factories. This is a more recent thing, the beginning of the 20th century. So just before the First World War, Haber-Bosch, Fritz Haber and someone Bosch, I can't remember his first name, invented a way to fix nitrogen from the air. But it's energy intensive. I can't remember the exact year. I think it might have been like 1910. I think it was right before the First World War.
Okay. Yeah. So you're right about this, because I'm looking at a chart of population growth, and that is exactly where the biggest peak in population growth ever begins.
Yeah. People eat food. So to have a big population, you need to produce a lot of food. And the only reason we're able to feed the 7 billion people on Earth is because of the Haber-Bosch process. So that's why you could say it's maybe the most important invention of all time, because without it, everyone would be starving right now.
Wow.
Because there's not enough bird shit in the world to feed everyone on Earth. But
so how does that thing work? What's the elementary understanding of how that process works?
Yeah, so the atmosphere is mostly nitrogen. Like, people think of the atmosphere as oxygen because you breathe it, right? But it's only 21% oxygen, and it's about 80% nitrogen. 79, I guess that would mean. And you take nitrogen out of the Earth and convert it into ammonia. which is NH4, I think, and one ammonia and four hydrogens with water, probably. I'm not actually sure the chemical process, but basically it's nitrogen and hydrogen. And then you can pour that on fields and the plants use it. So like plants in the wild have to have relationships with fungus, like on their roots, who take nitrogen from the air. So plants have a chronic shortage of nitrogen because there's tons of nitrogen in the air, but it's really inert. Like, because N2, like one nitrogen bonds to another nitrogen, so it like floats in the air and it's hard to get out of the air, right?
Okay.
For a plant to use. But some types of fungus can actually do this, and they kind of live on the plant roots. And this is why like trees have this symbiotic relationship with fungus, and they can extract nitrogen from the air. But like wow. crops like corn and wheat and stuff that we eat don't do that, or at least don't do it well. Some do. I think peas do it a little bit, alfalfa, some things like that. And that's why they were using fertilizer. So actually farmers used to like rotate their crops and put alfalfa and I think oats or something like that. Different types of crops in their fields.
To keep the soil healthy with
exactly.
like a bunch of different
keep
stuff.
Keep the soil healthy, to rejuvenate the soil. Yeah, exactly. But nowadays you don't need to do that because we moved to bird shit. And then from bird shit, we move to nitrogen products that are produced using intensive amounts of oil and coal and energy that extracts the nitrogen from the air.
That's amazing.
So that's how we can feed everyone. Basically, you're eating air.
Wow.
You're eating air that's extracted by coal and gasoline.
That is unbelievable. Yeah. That's how everybody's eating.
Yep. Pretty much.
Wow. It's a magic trick.
Our technology is kind of magic. Any technology is indistinguishable from magic to a sufficiently primitive civilization.
Comparing that to Amazon grocery delivery is just astronomical. It's just like insane how far it's come.
Yeah, so that's why we had this huge spike in population. And as you say like population is skyrocketing, but you also acknowledge that population increase is actually declining. The birth rates have fallen dramatically, right? This is the thing that we use to measure population growth. Basically, it's the number of births per female.
It's basically the millennials aren't having kids is basically what it is. That's how you say it. It's like the lay way to say it, I guess.
Yeah, but not just the millennials, the yuppies of old, even in the 1990s.
Right,
like
yeah.
Basically, once people become relatively wealthy and relatively educated, they stop having kids because they enjoy life. They have access to birth control. They can make choices for themselves. They don't need to have kids because it used to be that kids were an asset. On the farm, like most people used to be farmers, you know, 100 years ago, 200 years ago, 90% of people on Earth were farmers. And even today in like relatively poorer countries, most people are subsistence farmers, right? Like a lot of the countries in Africa, a lot of the people just produce their own food, which means they're not really integrated into the economy. They're just producing food for themselves. And in that situation, having more kids means more people to work on the farm.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But in a situation, if you move to the city and get a job, it's just more mouths to feed. So in the modern economy, the modern world, more kids are a liability and you have to feed them, right?
Yeah.
And
however,
it's expensive to raise kids.
Yeah.
But on a farm, they help.
It really does come down to if you feel like continuing your genes today, which is insane that that's all it comes down to. The fact that we've achieved that level of convenience.
Yeah, it's a choice having kids these days because of birth control access and education, and having kids is a choice nowadays, whereas it used to be like everyone has sex, right?
It used to be a consequence.
Sometimes if you don't have birth control, that sex is just going to result in kids. They're just going to pop out. You can't do anything about it.
Also, back in the day, it was just the thing to do was pop out babies because survival, you know?
Yeah, people might not have even known where babies came from. They're just like, I want to have sex because it's fun. And then, 9 months later, a baby showed up. I don't even know why that happened.
This baby looks just like me. What's going on?
Yeah. I don't know. Like, see, animals probably don't connect sex to babies, right? They just have sex and then babies come out. Do you think people, when do people connect sex to babies?
That's amazing. I never thought of it that way.
Do they think about it? Do they be like, okay, we're going to make a baby tonight? Like,
that's so
babies?
True. Yeah, they're probably
like,
not even
thinking. I'm going to have sex with you. And then who knows if a baby's going to come out or not. Like,
nature's calling.
It's just, I don't know if they thought, it's like 9 months apart, right? Like, they probably thought they were unconnected events.
That's hilarious. I wonder when we discovered that. That probably was a human discovery that we were. Because I bet you.
Oh yeah.
People have, definitely. There had to have been a time where there's probably nothing in recorded history, but a time where people didn't know that.
In some sense, animals do connect it. Like lions, for example, they have harems. Like, so male lions, basically they're lazy and they just sit around and get the females to do all their hunting. But they're strong, so they can like control the females and beat other males and steal their females, basically. But when they join a new pride, they'll go around and kill all the cubs because they're not their cubs, right? So if a male lion comes in, he'll kill all the cubs. So clearly the lion has a sense. I'm sure it's instinctual and it's not thinking about it, but still there's some connection of like heredity. So the male lion obviously knows that they're not his kids.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
But I don't know that he connects that to sex.
Well, I think that's probably instinctual too. I mean, it feels, doesn't it? Would you say that it feels different for you? Like, I don't know what you want to call it. I know you don't like the word energy, but I don't know a better word for it. But like when you're around family, how does it feel different to you than being around like a friend or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know that it did when I was younger, but when I'm older, yeah, I definitely noticed that being around family feels different and there's something kind of almost special, magical about it.
Yeah.
But it could be that, you know, these people have been your friends since you were born. Or, I mean, if they're younger, maybe not, but you've known them for a very long time. So it might just be like a really old friend. It's hard to.
Yeah. So maybe the lions kill all the cubs they don't know.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, I guess it could be that too, right? I mean, I'm sure that's maybe how they tell them. Maybe they can smell them or something like that.
They're just like, I don't know you. I don't know you. You're gone. Get out of here. The fact that the only reason we're all eating is due to technology means that we owe technology a lot. We are officially enslaved to it, you could say. Like, I don't want to use like a negative word, but I don't know. It seems like the best word to use. Like, we owe it respect because it's feeding us, you know?
If you tried to go without technology like that, like fertilizer production, you couldn't feed people.
That extrapolates to a larger scale too. Like we need to go where technology takes us. Technology points the finger and we go.
I think it's collaborative, so it's a little bit of each. Actually, this is something what my book is about, that human progress drives technology and technology drives human progress. It's kind of like an arms race where they both go hand in hand. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think that's how it is.
We're talking about fertility rates, right? And I think 2.3 or something like that is the replacement value because some die before they have their own kids.
Right.
And they've been plummeting. Today, most countries have a fertility rate below 2.3. So most countries do not replace their population. So many, many countries in Europe, for example, are declining in population. Japan is declining drastically in population. Macau is the lowest, apparently, but Macau is like not many people.
I heard that one of the main contributors to the growing population isn't necessarily anymore people having tons of kids, it's the life expectancy getting longer due to medicine, which is also technology.
Absolutely. Yeah. Especially infant mortality. Because it used to be that people would have 7 or 8 kids and then like half of them or most of them would die before they reached the age of having their own kids. So they'd all die before they were 10. And then you didn't get a lot of people, right? Because almost everyone died before they had their own kids. And now, with people surviving because of medicine, which is the other major accomplishment in human history, people survive, and they had kids. And so when medicine started extending life expectancy, people would live and then have kids, and then they'd have like 4 or 5 kids. And then that contributes to an explosion of population because not only do people survive, but they have kids. So there's like more people now having kids. And then
it takes
some time. There's a lag in the system. Basically, like it takes some time for people to catch up and realize, hey, I don't need to have like 6 kids because they're probably going to survive. So I can have like 2 kids or 3 kids or 1 kid or whatever it is or none. And there's a much better chance of them surviving.
Yeah, this also gets back to the idea of civilization in the first place, which was that child rearing is a lot easier in settled life than in hunting and gathering, wandering life. So, you know, the whole idea of society is just, you know, the wealthiest person can have the most kids. And this is like reinforced in tons of old ancient texts, including the Bible, you know, talking about, like, there's all these ancient proverbs. There's one that says, happy is the man whose quiver is full. And the quiver mm-hmm. is an analogy for children. And my parents mm-hmm. actually mm-hmm. had a license plate on their van because they had six kids. Wow. And their license plate said quiverful. And it was something that they believed, you know, is like that was, you know, and I'm not saying that they shouldn't have had all those kids. It's not a commentary on that at all. But like this idea the ideal is to have as many kids as possible is not sustainable because the projection of the population leveling off at 11 billion in 100 years or whatever is determined by people continuing to have less and less children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that comes into an interesting question, which is like personal choice, because you can't really prevent other people from having kids, right? So,
that's not what I'm saying at all.
It actually just happens naturally. It's not like population control. It's not like there's some government or external force saying people should not have kids. I mean, these days, I think there's almost as much pressure not to have kids as there is to have kids socially, maybe even more not to, because like you want to have a successful career and you want to put it off. Like a lot of women are, you know, putting off having kids until they're much older, men too, actually. But you can't kind of tell people not to have kids, right?
Like, no, yeah, that's not what I'm saying at all.
Except in China. It's very autocratic. It used to be in the 1950s, China had 6.5 kids per woman. And population exploded. It's now, you know, it's like 1.4 billion or something like that. And then they instituted the one-child policy and it plummeted to, I guess, 1.5. I think there were some exceptions and ways you could get around it, I guess. Or maybe there were fines. I'm not sure what happened if you had more than one, but I think fines or something like that. So some people did have more. I'm not advocating that. Like, I'm not saying it's a good idea, but at the same time, it kind of worked in China's case, I guess.
I'm not saying that people should be forced to not have children. What I am saying is that at the very least, if you are on the fence about children at all, just don't do it. Why would you feel pressure?
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Don't feel pressure.
Yeah, I mean, if there's any chance that you don't, you should just not do it. Because first of all, you're probably going to be a lot happier if you don't want kids. I always knew I wanted kids, so I did. And I love having kids, but it's not for everyone. This is the most amazing time ever. Like, the quality of life on Earth is ridiculous right now.
Yeah.
If you don't want to have kids, why would you have kids? We have roller coasters, for crying out loud. You know, like,
I hate roller coasters.
I like roller coasters, but I understand not liking them because I didn't like them at one point. But what I'm saying is, like, imagine what a caveman would think of a roller coaster.
Oh, yeah,
it would just be like, oh my God, like life is insanely good right now.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So if you don't want kids, just enjoy life, you know, like, because having kids is a huge responsibility.
Yeah. They wake you up in the middle of the night and it's super annoying.
If you're on the fence at all, you're going to be a shitty parent.
Pretty much. Yeah.
So spare yourself and your kids. But I actually think it's a great, some people think that's depressing, but I think it's like, I think it's just a sign of how amazing life is right now and how grateful you should be, especially if you live in a place that has amenities like America or any developed nation, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So the population is not going to grow forever and it probably will level off. However, once we leave our planet, we could support a much larger population. And even on our planet, if we invested in the right technologies, solar power. I mean, we have this giant fusion reactor in the sky, as I said, which is called the sun. There's no reason with technology that we can't support more people if we want to. And if people want to, you know, I think we should live in a free society where people have the choice to make their own decisions. And that could involve supporting a larger population.
Yeah.
Like, this kind of gets back to our happiness episode and what's your goal in life. I mean, if you were trying to organize a society or planet, what's your goal? Are you trying to have the most people with the most happiness? I mean, because that makes sense to me. I think there is some advantage to having more people because there's more people enjoying life, right?
Well, I call it well-being or something like that, or like, you know, because happiness is kind of elusive, I guess, like we kind of determined in that episode. Different people experience happiness differently. It means people initiate happiness differently. So it's kind of elusive, but well-being and just like, you know, how do we help humanity thrive the best? That's the idea of civilization in the first place, is streamlining life. You know, how do we continue to streamline life? How do we improve life for everybody is the ultimate question, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right.
How do we do it?
So if we had people on other planets like Mars and we had people living around the solar system, we could probably have 10 times the number of people we have on Earth because they're, I mean, it's just a question of resources. Population and overpopulation is merely a matter of technology, because if you can feed the people and you can provide resources for them, then there's no such thing as overpopulation. I mean, there's asteroids out there which have more iron and nickel than we've ever mined in the history of our species, because there's concentrated resources in asteroids that we don't find on Earth. And there's direct sunlight, and there's, I mean, like talk about water. I mean,
yeah,
like a lot of comets and asteroids are made of water.
How much are we investing in programs like that?
You mean space programs? Less than 1%?
Yeah, like programs to go mine asteroids.
Oh, insignificant. Probably basically nothing almost. There's a few private companies that are trying to do it. I mean, obviously, we're developing technologies, NASA and launch companies and things like that. But in terms of mining specific, basically nothing.
We need to do that.
Well, I think so. But yeah.
Oh my gosh. Why aren't we not doing that?
Not really sure.
That's insane. That seems like a no-brainer.
People have priorities. I think because it's long-term and it's hard for politicians to embrace really long-term thinking. I mean, it's all short-term, how to win the next election. I mean, the goal of a politician is to become reelected. So they want to advance policies that have impacts in the next year or maybe 2 years at most. Because if something happens 10 years from now, how does it affect the politician? I mean, they're already past the next election and the next one after that, right? Mm-hmm. That's why when Kennedy said, we choose to go to the moon, and he set the deadline as within this decade. So in the 1960s, he did this in 1961, and he said by the end of the decade, that was about 8 years. That is the longest possible horizon politics can possibly sustain, because that's about two terms. It means by the end of the second term, they're getting super close to getting on the moon. Right. But if it was way past this term, like the president says, we're going to Mars in 2050, that means nothing. That commits him to, or her, to absolutely nothing.
Basically. Right, right. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, maybe sometime after I'm no longer president, then people will go to Mars. Who knows?
He's passing it to the next guy or girl.
Right. That's all it's doing. You have to set short time frames in politics to actually see achievement within the election cycle.
That's insane.
And I think that's why people don't embrace long-term thinking. It's really tough. I mean, even just humans aren't good at this. It's like the marshmallow test. You know the marshmallow test?
No.
Yeah.
I know this one. The one where you take the kids and you ask them to if they want to invest their marshmallow for a second one.
Exactly.
And not eat it.
You put one marshmallow for the kids and you leave them for, I don't know how long, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And you tell them before you leave, if you don't eat this marshmallow, I'll give you a second one when I come back.
Yeah.
And most kids eat the marshmallow because they're like, fuck it. I got a marshmallow now. I'm going to eat
it. Why I have it right now.
I don't know if I'm getting another marshmallow. Like,
so it's basically like telling a monkey or something the same thing. You know, it's like just going to do the same. It's not going to think about that way. It's like, it's here now. Eat it. That's the impulse.
Humans are short-term thinkers. And it's kind of sad, but that's the truth.
So crazy. So how do we embrace long-term thinking is another good question, because how do we motivate people to think that way?
That's the root of population problems in the first place. I take birth control out of here, but having sex is a short-term thinking problem, right? Like, I want to have sex tonight. I don't care what happens 9 months from now.
I guess a more specific question would be, how do we get people to reduce their consumption, especially in a place like America?
You have to provide choices where people don't reduce their standard of living, but have the same amount of, quote, consumption. So basically, electric vehicles, solar power, we have to find ways to bring, like, if you have unlimited energy, you can do anything, like fusion power or something like that, but even massive solar investment, because, like, in California, we have a problem with water, right? But we're beside the ocean. The ocean, last time I checked, has a lot of water.
Yeah.
It's all salty, but desalination is only a matter of technology. So if you have enough energy, you can desalinate water. It's about $1 per cubic meter. I guess Americans don't know what a meter is, but it's 3.3 feet. So
this America does.
So imagine like 3 feet by a cube, 3 feet by 3 feet by 3 feet of water. That's like, mm-hmm. I don't know, like a couple showers worth or something like that. That's about $1 mm-hmm. to desalinate, which is too expensive mm-hmm. to grow plants. It's kind of too expensive to even like have people shower with. I mean, you can obviously have people drink it. It's cheap enough to drink. It's cheaper than bottled water, a lot cheaper.
But it'll get cheaper.
Only if energy production gets cheaper. So it's entirely dependent on energy production. So if we had unlimited energy and unlimited power, then we'd have unlimited water if you were by the ocean. In fact, you'd have unlimited water everywhere because you could build pipes and pumps to send the water anywhere you want. And then you have massive fields growing crops in the Sahara. And then you have, like, you know how much of our planet we use to produce plants that we eat, agriculture?
I know it's ridiculously low, but I don't know the actual number.
I think it's like 9% or so. I don't remember.
Yeah, it's something like that.
But basically, so as I said, like if you wanted to cram all the 7 billion people in the planet into the density of a city like Hong Kong, they could all fit in Connecticut. But if you wanted to grow all the world's food, it would be basically like the size of the continental United States or something like that, which is which is small, very, very small compared with the size of the world. The world's pretty big. Like the United States is, what, like 5% of the world's land area? I mean, people don't even realize how small the United States is because it's fairly far north. And because of the projection, we tend to think that like the places in the north seem bigger than they are. Like Greenland seems gigantic, but it's actually not that big.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you take a projection of the United States and put it in Africa, I think like seven or eight United States can fit within Africa.
Another thing I think that we're going to have to learn to do in the future is compete amicably. You know, there's this huge question of quality of life and like, how do we, what does that mean? You know, it's almost like the redistribution question too. But I think that's going to be a big thing we're going to have to figure out as, you know, with this, so many people on the planet, how do we share the resources that are here equally? And how do we avoid hating each other while we're competing on this grand scale?
Well, it doesn't have to be equal sharing, but it does have to be such that everyone gets what they need and everyone gets something. I think,
yeah,
that,
I mean, everybody gets what they're owed, what they work for, obviously, and capitalism and all that stuff. But what I'm saying is like, there's a finite amount of resources on this planet. And if the population does level off at 11 billion people globally, like they think it's going to, then, you know, that means that if it is 11 billion people, we are going to have to reduce our consumption in places like America because there's just not enough resources. So we are going to have to learn to share.
Yeah. I mean, we have to learn to do things better and more sustainable.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
That's true.
There's two things. One is the sustainability side, but it's also a tragedy of the commons, which is really hard because there's very little incentive for individual people not to pollute, right? Because you might feel good about it, but I mean, it's not really affecting you personally. It's affecting everyone, the tiniest little amount, but put together everyone on Earth, and then it's affecting everyone a lot, right? But your individual contribution is so small that if you reduce waste, it has very little impact personally. But, you know, but if everyone does, it has a lot. That's the tragedy of the commons. So it's a tough question. How do you get people to do that? And the only way to get people to do that is to give them solutions that, you know, are basically as good as non-polluting solutions. So you have cutlery that is plastic disposable cutlery that's made from plants, right? It's biodegradable and it doesn't come from oil. Like that's what we got to do. We should basically look at all the things we use, you know, all the consumer goods should be made of plant-based things. So they're biodegradable and basically replaceable forever without oil.
You're totally right. That's it.
Plastic's a big problem, actually, in the ocean, and whales will judge you for it.
It's true. Do it for the whales. Buy plastic for the whales. I'm going to go buy a plastic whale now. The ultimate irony.
Yeah, plastic. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How you show you love whales and hate them at the same time.
We're going to turn it over to the listeners. We want to know what you think about this conversation of overpopulation. I'm a poet and I didn't know it. Shoot us a tweet at Julian Was Here. That's me. @Mars Raider. That's Andrew. It makes me feel so good knowing there's room on this planet for all of us and that all we really need to do is adjust our consumption habits so that more people can have better lives. That's just such an encouraging picture of the future. This has been Two Damn White Guys on Spellbound. Thanks so much for listening. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. As always, we appreciate your support and you taking the time to listen. We know there's a lot of podcasts out there, so we're glad to have you with us. We like to think we have a pretty good time around here. Learning can be fun. See you guys next Monday. Take care.